Blog Talk Radio.
Troy Davis. As all of you know, Mr. Troy Davis was executed this evening. This is a gentleman who was on death row, and there were tons and tons and tons of protests all around the world to stay this execution because of the evidence that was presented in his case that indicate that he was not guilty of the crime for which he was convicted. So, Since so many of us have just had many, many questions about this and the execution actually just took place, I wanted to talk with my good friend Jerome and my son, Sean, who's on the line. And Sean and I were over here talking a bit about it, Jerome, and we just really were not sure what to do with this information. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to welcome to Ask Kathleen, Mr. Jerome Esprit. Hey, Jerome.
Hello, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well, just digesting all of the news of the day.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me at such short notice to talk about this. And hi, Sean.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, good, thank you. Sean, this is Jerome. Jerome, this is
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Nice to meet you.
I know. Nice to meet you.
So how do you, well, Sean, you had some strong feelings about this. Do you want to start?
Sure, I'll start. It was kind of surreal during the entire time, during the entire day. Just kind of had the opinion that there was just so much uncertainty around the case that there was no way that they could actually go through with the execution. And it's been stayed a couple of times and took for granted that eventually I thought that it would just be solved. I didn't actually think that this would happen. And this reminded me of other situations. I'm 24 now, but there have been a couple of situations when I was younger, like the Amadou Diallo, the Sean Bell incident, and all the cases that went along with that. And back then, I didn't really have as strong of a reaction as I have now. But now I kind of realize that change a couple of scenarios, and instead of Troy Davis, that could be Sean Roker in the newspaper right now. So I was just kind of saying, what happens from here? Like, what can you do? What can be solved? And yeah, that's just kind of where I am right now.
I certainly thank God that it's not you, and we'll say that it won't be you. But I certainly understand. As a matter of fact, a lot of the pictures that I put up on the page for the show tonight were the protests, and many of the people, one of the T-shirts that came out for this protest in particular, all the folks that have on a T-shirt that say, "I am Troy Davis." So in other words, this could easily have been anybody who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So Jerome, you want to come on, weigh in, Jerome. What do you think?
It's one of those things where, you know how we've talked about this before, about how systems work, and it's more of an issue of a systemic problem when it comes to black people in particular, in the in the criminal justice system and how we can get convicted and put to death with all of that reasonable doubt, let alone the fact that there's no proof actually linking him to being there. And, you know, 7 of the 9 witnesses recanted their statement. That should be automatic retrial. But, you know, it's without actually going through the case again, just because he's passed, is that I don't know what everybody else is supposed to do with that, but I just say that we are, every time you want to forget, we are constantly reminded that black people in this country are abused by a system. I mean, if you look at all the people who are in support, the Amnesty International folks, former FBI director, there was a lot of people. I'm kind of drawing a blank a little bit on some of them, but there was a lot of people there, external, who saw the case, even protesting at the U.S. Embassy in other countries about this case. That's how well known it was outside of this country, and
even
how
Pope,
far to what you say?
Even the Pope and a couple of other
even the Pope.
Figures.
Yes, the Pope even weighed in on it. And, you know, we can't seem to get this part of our system right. Like, we cannot hold tight to a system when we know that there's an injustice in it. There should be a blanket waiver of, okay, this was done wrong, we need to pull back from it. But putting someone to death is just really, I don't really know what to say about it. I don't know what to think about it, actually.
I don't either. You know, I've been following it. I signed in on a lot of the petitions. You know, I signed the petitions and shared them on Facebook and spread them around and spread out some news. And I actually, you know what, though? I got to tell you guys this. I really didn't think that they were going to put this guy to death. I really did not think they were going to do it. I didn't think so. Even when it came down. Mm-hmm. The last, you know, the hour when it hit 7 o'clock, and I was, they're not going to put this guy to death. They're just not going to do it. Especially last night when
right.
I read all the testimonies, the new statements from those same witnesses that helped put him in prison on death row in the first place. When they recanted it, especially the guy who said, you know, the police pressured me so and harassed me so that they basically weren't going to leave me alone until I told them what they wanted. And they typed up a statement, told me to sign it, and I didn't read it because I can't read. When I saw that, I'm like, oh, my goodness. And then it was testimony after testimony after testimony. Like, it was like 15 of them I read yesterday. I saw all of the changed statements by all of these people, and they all basically said the same thing. The police typed up the statement and told me to sign it. And most of them said they didn't read it, or they were so exhausted, or the police threatened them with prison time themselves, and so they testified against him. And they all said that there was this guy named Red who was the actual shooter. Did anybody see that?
No, I didn't. I didn't see that part.
Yeah.
I saw that one of the witnesses was the actual shooter and had bragged about it at a party, that he had shot an off-duty cop.
Right, right. Yes, and he had bragged to a couple of people about it, and I think that, you know, a few people had questioned him himself about it, and they said a few... You know, he said a few choice words. He asked somebody, you know, what are you asking me about this? I'm going to see if I can find it because somebody sent it. It was sent to me yesterday. So I'm going to see if I can find that. It came in my email. And, it, you know, all the various statements that this particular guy made to other people and the statements that the witnesses themselves actually made that, you know, that said, listen, I didn't write the statement. The police wrote the statement. And they basically harassed me to the point that I was forced into signing it. And this is something that we hear all the time. we hear this all the time, that when, you know, when the police are ready in a lot of situations, not always, of course, but in a lot of situations, when the police are ready to convict someone, they will use tactics like this. We know that.
Right, and I think more the bigger, again, problematic issue with these particular cases is how much faith do we have as minorities in this country in a system to do something correct? I mean, it's just problematic across the board. I don't know where to begin. I don't know if I ever told the story that I actually knew Johnny Gamage, who was killed by the Pittsburgh police. I can't even remember how many years ago. I draw a blank with the time-space issue in this one. But I knew Johnny, grew up with him, just not really a lot of weight on him at all. And he was asphyxiated. And the problem was that during the whole trial of the police officers, the system will not convict police officers of killing anybody, but they just show that they will convict anybody when a policeman dies, regardless if you're guilty or not. And that is the problem that we have to look at as a nation, but really as a community, we kind of need to understand what's going on here, because we can't change this. Systemically, it just keeps happening, and it keeps happening, and our psyche is almost built around the hoping of it changing without actually making it change. And so
right.
We really have to figure out a way around this.
And that's what I was listening to the radio this evening, and NPR, and the gentleman who was doing a lot of the fighting from Amnesty International, I can't remember his name right now, forgive me, he was on the radio for about an hour straight through, and while he was talking, the Supreme Court came back with the decision, and they said it was one sentence, that the Supreme Court didn't spend very much time at all looking this thing over. It was one sentence, and basically this attorney from Amnesty International said, well, the Supreme Court did look at Troy Davis's case before, and his opinion was that maybe the court did not see that much new evidence based on from the last time that they actually looked at the case, not enough to overturn their own decision. So they were all disappointed, of course, that they only had one line, and there were no dissenting justices. I was pretty surprised about that, too, because I was expecting that, okay, well, maybe it was the conservatives on the court that, were comfortable enough with putting a one-line sentence that they're not going to overturn the conviction. But even Ruth Bader Ginsburg and our newest justice, what's her name again? The newest justice, the justice that President Obama just put on the court.
Sotomayor.
Right, Sotomayor. None of them. They there were no dissenting opinions. So it was a unanimous court that decided not to stay this conviction of this man, despite the fact. Yeah, Kimmy Poo in the chat room is saying, look at the Supreme Court members, you know, and Ernest is saying it was a witch hunt. It's just shameful. It's shameful. And again, you know, I don't know how many people felt like I did, that there was just no way with all of these protests with over 660,000 signatures on petitions to save this man, even to give him a new trial. They convicted him anyway. Right. So
yeah.
Anyway,
and like,
go ahead, Sean.
Go ahead, Sean.
Oh no, I was just gonna say that's how I felt. With the number of people that were behind this and the facts in the case, there's just no way that you figure this is like a no-brainer. You have to give him a new trial. I mean, especially when you're talking about police officers forcing people to sign testimonies and all that stuff. Like, that's complete grounds for the trial to be thrown out. So, I don't know, it's just kind of unreal right now.
Yeah, when you look at it, I mean, just running through those names, you know, Pope Benedict and former President Jimmy Carter and conservatives like Bob Barr and William Sessions from the FBI and Bianca Jagger saying that evidence against Mr. Davis is virtually non-existent. You have all of those people out there, not just protesters on the ground, but you actually have other people who are influential in politics and in government, and you're still not taking a good look at it. It's not that they're not taking a good look at it. The problem is that the wheels of that system went in motion, and nobody wanted to turn it back.
Yeah.
And
right.
You know, and that's just kind of difficult to take, really.
It's very difficult.
I mean, it shouldn't have been this long, really.
It should not have. It should not have come down to you know, the last 72 hours, the last week. I think I signed the petition. I first signed the petition. Good night, Sean. I know you have to go to sleep, honey. Thanks for hanging out. I did this for you, you know that, because you were so upset. I just felt like we needed to talk to some people about this.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good night, everybody.
All right. Have a good night, Sean.
You too, honey. The conversation that, you know, when they really became aggressive about this, it has been going on for a while, but I signed that petition and really saw the movement around the petitions to stay his conviction last week. This time was last week. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the NAACP sent out another one, and I think his sister sent out another petition, and then it started, you know, gaining momentum. And when they came back and said they were over, thanks, Kimmy Pooh, says goodnight to Sean, there were over 660,000, and that was as of last week, so I know it was tons more. But today, Jerome, I heard them talking about the protests in London that were on behalf of this man. So this is around the world. There were protests. So the gentleman from Amnesty International tonight was saying the entire world is looking at America and saying, shame on you.
Right. There were, I think, around 10, well, there were a bunch of demonstrations, but there's the Council of Europe, which is another organization of groups in Europe, actually called for the census to be commuted, and they were protesting along with Amnesty International at the U.S. Embassy in Paris. And so you're right, it had just kind of taken a turn to be international, and this country, for some reason, will not understand the impact of what it does to everybody else's impression of this country, and fairness and all of these other things, injustice. We sell this stuff around the world, and if this was Libya or Iran, we would be raising all kind of sand at the UN talking about we just put an innocent man to death.
That's right. And of course, the president was in New York today. Half of the, you know, part of the reason why I think I was spinning around on the highways tonight, because the traffic is always a mess when the president is here. But he's doing three days at the UN talking about peace. And never, you know, this didn't come up in the conversation, but they're all the leaders, all the world leaders are right here talking about peace and talking about human rights and talking about justice. And at the same time, we are looking at putting an innocent man to death in the final hours of his life, and they didn't address this, but the same leaders all in their countries, many of them, people were concerned about America allowing this to happen, and you know, and it really is America now, because once it hits the United States Supreme Court, we're talking about the law of the land, the highest court in the land.
Took a look at it and said, "Forget it."
Forget it in one sentence.
Mm-hmm. Right. No real explanation. Just we're not going to do it.
Yeah. That's it. Sorry. Done. You know, his time is up, and we are not intervening, you know, let the conviction go. And that was their last opportunity, because they did stay it at 7 o'clock. It was supposed to happen at 7, and they you know, there was one more judge that had an opportunity to say something. He said no, and then they were able to actually get it in front of the United States Supreme Court. So, you know, and there we have it. So
well,
what is it
you
that
know,
you think? Go ahead.
No, no, no. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, what is it you were saying that, you know, time to, you know, for us to really do something because...
Well, well, it is, I think it's kind of time for us to kind of explore our freedom a little bit differently as a community. And we have been constantly, and I know we're kind of taught this from the passive side of the culture. Like, we're always taught we are equally American as everybody else, which we already know that. But the point is that we have to work together as a coalition. And whether we vote in blocks or whether we stand in blocks to make sure that as minorities, we actually have a lobbying point. The problem is that nobody takes responsibility for people of color. I'm sorry, not people of color. Nobody takes responsibility for black people in this country because they don't think that we actually are a coalition in and of ourselves. And the problem is with that is that everybody has this divide and conquer issue. Half of us are disenfranchised. Some people don't know that they're black. We have all these other issues. But truly, every time I watch something like this happen, it really kind of says to me that someone needs to speak up about this in a way that is not for political benefit or gain. It needs to really be something that we need to understand, hey, something like this happens, we need to support it, and we need to lobby for it.
Yeah.
And we need to make that work. So we need to put together some type of effort to make sure that we can get out good information. It is why it's important on the news side that we look at alternative news, and it's one of the reasons why I do news, is that I think the perspective is very cloudy and bad in this country if we only look for news inside this country. And so when we watch CNN, you watch MSNBC or ABC, and those guys are telling you AP and UPI feeds, and they're always coming from the perspective that is vilifying one side, and it's always vilifying black folks. And we need to make sure that we can do something to counter that to some degree.
Right. Right. And you're absolutely right. And like you're saying, there needs to be a process, a format, a vehicle through which these things can be countered. There's got to be a vehicle through which these things can be countered, because most people tonight just feel helpless. And I'm surprised that I'm not surprised. I'm not calling this Jerome. You know, you understand how we think in laws of attraction and everything like that. I'm not calling on this, but more than once this evening with the people that I've spoken to, they are expecting to see riots, you know, and I
They shouldn't. We're smarter than this. The issue is that, yes, there will be times that there's going to be unrest for things to happen. That system has been cranking away at him since 91. And what happens is that we can't let that thing go under the radar. We can't let things like this go under the radar. And luckily, that international has picked it up, which is forcing news outlets internally to pick it up. Now, the one thing that I want to say about this is that the more we put this stuff out in front of our thoughts and into our speaking and into our news cycle, the more you'll understand why black people are vilified in this country. But I can tell you this, if it wasn't for the international pressure, I believe that it probably wouldn't even been on TV.
Right.
it probably wouldn't have been on CNN and MSNBC at all, because none of the other news outlets picked it up. So when I was covering the internet looking for news stories, and I checked from, you know, BBC to all these other international outlets, I saw more on those outlets than I did on the outlets internally. And so we need to look at it from that perspective and bring everybody's awareness and consciousness up. It's almost like raising a black child in this country and not telling him that you can get arrested at the drop of a dime and shot at the drop of a dime by the police. This is not a black-on-black issue. And although, you know, black people are arrested at a higher rate, white folks, just because we are minorities in the country, they are actually convicted of murder by more, because truly by numbers they should be, right, because we're a smaller percentage of the population. But we are so much more convicted at a higher rate for race killing than anybody else. If it's a black person, they think it's somebody white, the black person always goes for that. If the white person kills somebody black, it's very rare. But, I mean, I know that happened today, but it's still kind of rare. So we need to look at it from that perspective and start telling each other or speaking in unison about our consciousness of this happening, instead of sweeping it under the rug saying, well, it probably looked like he did it, and I'm not familiar with the case. You don't need to be familiar with the case in this one in particular, because there's so much of an international outcry about it.
Right. Right.
And like I said, in the case in Pittsburgh, where, you know, again, Johnny Gammis grew up with me, and he was a year or so older, but the trick is that he had two master degrees. He got them both at the same time, and he was in Pittsburgh, gets pulled over driving an expensive car. And his cousin played for the Pittsburgh Steelers at the time, and he weighed 125 soaking wet, and the police said, ooh, we thought his cell phone was a gun. And
so we
lived through this, and I remember the protests and having people go down and just petition the system, expecting it to do something that was worth justice, right? Something remotely close to some type of justice got none. I mean, this kid has passed away, and none. No liability. Oops, my bad. Mistake. So instead of directing your anger towards or frustration towards the negative outcomes of this, we need to become awareness so that we become stronger. And that is the point I'm just trying to make, is that once you become aware of these things, you'll never be fooled by the impression that it could have happened. You can always pick negative examples, but that's not something that we should dwell on. Don't dwell on negative, because it just manifests in more negative.
Right, absolutely. The conversation around Troy Davis, even when the first request for petitions came out and said sign the petitions, this is I wish I could find one. I'll see if I can find one. But basically, they were saying they kept saying there's not enough evidence. There's not enough evidence. There's conflicting evidence, right? And instead of them actually saying, we don't believe he did this, or he's innocent, that he did not do it, they didn't really say that in the beginning. So I think even when the outcry began, people were saying, well, is it just that there isn't enough evidence, and they can't convict him, which is the law, by the way. If you can't convict this person beyond a reasonable doubt, or there is reasonable doubt, then he cannot be convicted, least of all, given the death penalty. And that was really the cry. That was really the cry out here. But one of the things that I noticed when I was just reviewing the copy over and over and over again. No one ever said in the beginning, you know, like last week and the week before, that he was actually innocent of this crime. That really
right.
just came out. Yeah. That just came out, for me anyway, I just saw that in the last 2-3 days at best.
Right.
That they're saying not only is there conflicting evidence and people, the 7 of the 9 witnesses changed their testimony, but that he is actually innocent of this crime. And so now it just says something a little bit different. It says something a little bit different even to me as an attorney. Are you telling me, okay, he's on death row and we're just not really sure, so let him go? Or we're just not really sure, so have this huge outcry? Or you really think he's innocent? And when they began to say, listen, the man is innocent of this, and there's somebody else who did it, and the police forced these people to give that testimony. And when that is obviously known to the world, that's not a good look for America.
Right. Right. And more than it not being a good look for America, it is hard to sell the American dream to everybody else. I mean,
it is
no big secret that we rank number one on Amnesty International's list of crimes against its citizens in the industrialized nations. We're always number one. And the reason that is because more black people, the minorities of your country, when they're killed at a 90-something percent rate more than the majority by your police department, that is your government enforcing unfair, selective oppression. So when other countries have this, they'll say, oh, well, this is a Muslim nation and the Christians get oppressed. If Christians were getting killed at 90%, then Amnesty would say, you guys are targeting. In the United States, black people get killed at about 90% to white folks as a, you know, 14% of the population, and that is unheard of. So I know that this usually makes senators and all of those guys upset that Amnesty does this, but truly, in looking at the numbers, that is outrageous. We don't have the population for us to be targeted so high, and we shouldn't be targeted anyway, but it doesn't even justify itself just based on the ratio. And so we can't stop tripping over ourselves to sell that dream to other foreigners in foreign countries while we have numbers like that internally. We cannot seem to clean your own house, but we can actually tell other people what their house should look like.
Yeah. Absolutely. Very good point, Jerome. We're joined right now by Ernest from Ernest Radio Network. Ernest, thanks so much for calling in. It's great to have you.
Well, I appreciate you having me here. I apologize ahead of time. I'm getting over a cold, so my voice might be a little wonky tonight. So.
No problem.
But one thing I think this topic is going to grip people as much as the O.J. Simpson verdict did. I really believe that. And I've said on my show before, and I plan on covering this topic Thursday night on my show, I have said this before, though, that the U.S., that people in the U.S. and those in power do not value black people. They don't value anyone non-white, non-Christian, or non-conservative. And to them, it's just one more black person out of the way. That's the way it is. We haven't progressed as far as we would like to think that we have in this country since 60 years ago when we were hosing down black people with fire hoses. Nothing's changed to me. And we also can't be surprised when our children or those around us enact violence on someone when the state has the monopoly on violence. If I go out and hit somebody, I can get arrested for that. But if a policeman comes up and decides I'm not being civil and wants to shoot 50,000 volts of electricity through my body, they're sanctioned to do so. There's something wrong with the whole system in general, and Troy Davis, unfortunately, has been a victim of that among many other men, black or white.
Good point. Thank you.
It's got me fired up, Kathleen.
I I know. And we have another. Oh, the other caller left us. I was going to open up the other line. We had another caller on. But, so Jerome, what do you think are the first steps to, you know, if it's not coalition or joining together for the purpose of lobbying and so forth? Oh, there's one more point that I wanted to make. The photograph of the of Troy Davis, may he rest in peace, the photographs of Troy Davis that were sent out with the petitions and the flyers and the statements, the photograph of him just was, it was very bland, very non-humanistic, just this, it looked like, you know, not very different from a mugshot. So I wonder, when I got the petition from the NAACP, that didn't include a picture of him, but all of the other articles and the newspaper articles, and when you did see it, Jerome, in different places, you saw just that one shot of him. I don't know, Ernest, if you guys saw that with the glasses, and he just kind of looks like, you know, a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, I know exactly the one you're talking about.
Right, and it was not very, you know, it just didn't make you think, it didn't make you really, it wasn't, I don't know, it didn't evoke any emotion from you if you looked at that picture.
No, I agree. And, you know, when I searched for Troy Davis pictures in Google Images tonight, trying to schedule my show and put up some images, that image is all over the place. It's hard to find any other shot of the guy.
Well, I found some great ones, and I have them up, and that was the point. There's, you know, a picture of him with his mom. There's a picture of him at a graduation. It looks like it's likely a – I can't tell if it's a high school or a college graduation. There wasn't really a description there. But there was some great photos of him that could have been included. But Jerome, you do a lot of campaigns and marketing and so forth. Is there a reason that they would use just that pic? Yeah, even someone, Kimmy Poo in the chat room said it was an eerie picture.
Yeah, you know, you have to remember. Oh, I'm sorry, you don't have to remember anything. But the news. They put up things to give you a narrative. And so, you know, when I don't want to say it in a grand conspiracy way, because it's not that. What it is that when people are conditioned to behave in a certain way, they uniformly behave in that way. And so what happens is that that picture is a standard picture to use because they – as systemically, we're just saying this guy's going to die, so you're going to use – when you try to put somebody to death, you vilify them. I mean, it's the issue with all pictures when it especially comes to minorities that, I'm sorry, when it comes to black people, because I have to watch my language in this as well. When it comes to black people, the vilified pictures are always the pictures that are used because it's what sells to white America. I mean, so when it really comes down to it, when you want to sell something bad, you get this horrible picture to scare white folks and to say, this is the guy who we're going to take off the street. And it's just a marketing issue, and it's kind of what drives news these days. Well, I'm sorry. It's what drives news for the last probably 20 years, is that when it comes down to black people in particular, they show whatever the scariest picture is. And not even in the negative situations. They'll show a negative LeBron James picture. They won't show a picture of LeBron James smiling too much unless they have a live game on or the teams are marketing him. You know, if the Miami Heat is marketing him, they'll show it in one way. But if the news show him, they'll show him with a mean look on his face or him dunking or do something. You know, it is kind of fits a narrative to tell the story that you want to have. So when you talk about people who are editors or news directors, they intentionally use those pictures.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when O.J. Simpson was on the front of Newsweek and his visage was actually darkened to make him look more sinister.
Yep. It fit the narrative for Newsweek, so they actually darkened or shaded his picture, made it darker.
You know, one thing that the media does now and that they're really good at and that the government does as well is they're really great at creating a boogeyman. And look, I'm a white dude, and Troy Davis doesn't scare me, but I recognize the fact that the media and politicians will pick those kind of pictures, like you said, for a narrative and create a boogeyman to promote their own agenda instead of just telling the truth. I don't know where we got so off track in the media of sensationalizing things, and it seems like every show or every story in the news is more of a commentary than just telling the facts. I mean, somebody dig up Walter Cronkite and clone that guy and get him back on TV, you know, or Edward Murrow. Put somebody back on TV that can just tell the damn facts instead of adding their own commentary.
Well, I can answer that part. It's just because this is a part of why when Reagan got rid of the Fairness Doctrine in 87, it's a part of the structure now that the news does not have to tell the truth. So Fox News was created after that because you can mislead on television on purpose, whereas they used to actually pull your FCC license when you misled. And so Reagan kind of perfected that, if you want to know where it came from. It started prior, but once he did the Willie Horton thing, I think it was it Reagan? I think that Willie Horton was Reagan, and I forgot what was George H. Bush's thing. And Clinton even did the sister soldier thing. Like, there's something in politics that said if you demonize somebody black, it'll help you with your white voters. And Reagan did that so well that when they pulled the Fairness Doctrine, all the news stations actually adopted that same premise for getting viewers. And Fox just became better than everybody else of polarizing people against black folks because it sold and it brought them more viewers because we love to hate someone. So you would go on TV and lie and say, the president's not born here. He's a secret Muslim. And you will know that you cannot be a senator without the background check. You cannot go to college. You cannot go to Harvard. We all know that there are a lot of things that you cannot do in life without getting a Social Security number and having a birth certificate. So we went through years. People still say that about the president. And we watched this and we actually create this kind of doubt because news creates the negative and creates that whole boogeyman thing of something is going to harm you if you don't do something now. They do that for ratings, which is sad.
Well, and here, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add to what you were saying because a lot of these stations now, whether it's Fox or CNN or MSNBC, there's also a great amount of confusion there that people don't seem to pick up on, that a lot of shows, whether it's Glenn Beck or whether it's The Last Word with O'Donnell, I forget his name, or Rachel Maddow or whoever, that these guys hide under the guise of commentator, not journalist, but yet they're covering news that journalists should be covering. So therein, they have this leeway to put out their commentary and put out their own ideas under the guise of being a commentator when what they're really doing is pushing a news story the way that they want to, and they're pushing their own agenda. And then when you get the actual news broadcast on, it's one big muddle of confusion on TV, and most people can't decipher between the two. That, as well as what you said, I think is what adds to confusion among people and people see comment. I mean, since when did opinion become truth in this country?
Right, and like I said, I think it's since the 87 Fairness Doctrine was pulled. And, you know, the trick is, as well, is that people don't know that Fox News is not news. Like, people really don't know that. They have actually a news show on Fox News, I think, but the whole station is sitting there just to give you an impression. So since it's called Fox News Channel, we actually think that is news, or some people do.
Right.
I think that that kind of confusion in the general public is what the problem is, because you're watching people do commentary on Fox News and you think it's a news station.
Right. And that's what I mean, whether it's if you have Glenn Beck or Bill O'Reilly or whoever on, people think, oh, this is the next news program on the schedule and I'm going to watch it. And it's not news. It's just people commenting. I mean, it's no different than what the three or four of us are doing. I'm just not on TV doing it.
Hold on 1 second, guys. We have 27 seconds left before we are, I think the chat room may cut off. The number is 909-265-9189. We'll stay on about 10 more minutes before the show is over. So 909-265-9189. And we're just going to wrap up for the last 10 minutes if you're in the chat room and you want to join us. Thanks so much for listening in. And we'll be talking about this more. Ernest will have it on, I'm sure, and Jerome will be talking about it tomorrow, too. Okay, guys, so we have a few minutes left on the recording. Ernest, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go right ahead.
No, I think you cut Jerome off. I mean, I was. We're just bantering, so I'm good. So.
Oh, okay. Jerome, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off then.
I mean, no, the point was is that we have to watch how we look at the news and how we look at what's going on in society. Like we kind of put blinders on when it really comes down to trusting what people are telling us. It's almost like looking at Libya, and I know this may get us cut off in a minute, but it's kind of like looking at Libya. Like the Libyan people are not mad at Gaddafi. That is us wanting Libyan oil. Libya has what's called sweet crude, which means it doesn't have to be treated as much. And we've been after that oil since like the 80s. And so since we've looked at Saddam made a villain out of him and then went for the oil, now who's next in line? I'm sure that was long in the planning of saying, ooh, look, this here, let's vilify him. But if you do a little bit of research in there, you'll find 5 years ago he was president of the African Union. So you have all of these countries that are looking at us, targeting him, and you'll find that it's only the European nations that are targeting Libya, and other African nations are probably sitting there going, what is wrong with them?
Right.
Right? And we don't report news, and I can tell you that from looking at so much international news, that we are not being critical of ourselves, and we are just going by some old standard of, Walter Cronkite is on TV. Walter Cronkite is not there anymore. The ethics in journalism is not the same. It's money-driven sensationalism.
They're gone.
Yeah. All of them. Yeah.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, you really had that old guard, that old school that was still on TV, and whether it was Dan Rather or Sam Donaldson or whoever, they're either dead or, you know, doing something else. And then, you know, you don't have it there anymore. And I think it seems like America gets a little bit lazy trying to decide what is news and what is commentary. And people like Glenn Beck and people like, well, let's just use Glenn Beck. People like him know that. He's not stupid. His ideas may be out of, you know, they may be off kilter, but he's not stupid in knowing that people will view him as a news source, and he'll say whatever. And people are just too lazy to go search for the news. And I think it's ridiculous that we should have to search out the news at this point. But you really do. You have to find other news sources. You know, because MSNBC is just as liberal as Fox is conservative. So where is the happy medium? Where is the truth?
You know what? Okay, just two quick points on that. Mm-hmm. Like, 'cause I'm going to disagree with you. Glenn Beck is stupid, so I want to say that for the record. I think that
in
Fox
general,
News,
yes, but he knows his audience and he knows that they're dumb. So,
right, but they profit from his narrow thinking. Like, so when you deal with conservative people, it's a small pool, and it's a money-driven pool because they're so narrow that they only consume whatever one person tells them to do. So. You know, that pool is very, and I've been doing politics a long time, and I can tell you I've been in those rooms, and in those rooms, they have this indoctrination thing that they do, that they just line up behind one another, without even questioning what it is. And with people like, you know, or organizations like Fox News, they only change their behavior when it is, when their ratings drop. Now, MSNBC is not liberal. That's why Keith Olbermann got fired. Once Comcast bought MSNBC, the ownership got a little bit more conservative, and they didn't want him on there. So when you see people like the racist Pat Buchanan, and people like the racist Donald Trump kind of thing on those networks talking like they actually have some balance, they are they're being deceptive to people as well, or Joe Scarborough. Like, those guys are really confusing people, because even on what we would think would be liberal stations, they keep there's conservative people there skewing that part of the news. CNN is conservative. ABC is conservative. Even by its ownership, that's why you see Sarah Palin's daughter on Dancing with the Stars. It's because they want to rake in the Fox News money, and it's money-making from them. So our news has become conservative across the board. I don't think we truly have, like, a liberal media station. That is creating the boogeyman on Fox's side. It's the liberal media that's creating the boogeyman. So they become more conservative just to fight back against trying to appear to be liberal, and it becomes a bad cycle of going downhill. It's like going down the drain from there.
Wow. Wow. Well,
I didn't mean that to be too bleak. but I don't mean
sometimes
it to be too bleak.
Sometimes
the truth is bleak, because,
though. You got to just put it out there and let people cut it how they want, you know?
Well, the thing is that it's kind of like everything. It is how you watch it, which is how you get your news and information. So you can't take it verbatim or very literal. We have to use our own critical thinking skills. You need to know when to infer, when to take things literal, and when to evaluate it. We need to work on our own critical thinking skills to say that somebody is trying to sell you a bag of goods. And there was a news director here in New York that said to me one time, it was years ago, about 20 years ago, and he said, we need to get more stories about people of color on the news. And I said, he said, the people of color don't like the news, or black people don't like the news. They throw stuff at the news station, so they have to, you know, go around with unmarked cars. And I said, they should throw stuff at you, because there's nothing positive about black people on the news. And he said, well, you guys don't give us anything, pretty much. And I laughed at him, because that's a chicken or the egg issue. If you're news, you would be looking for balance, but instead of having balance, you're saying, you guys don't check us to give you anything positive, so we're essentially white suburban entertainment television. And that's what I told him. He agreed, but the point was is that there's nothing that we can do about it, because they are looking for a specific demographic, and black people in this country are casualties to that. We're not the target audience, so we get to be sensationalized and vilified just to pacify white entertainment television.
Well, let me ask you a question, because that's a really good point. So here we have, all right, I have a TV show which has really good content, actually. You know, of course it can be, it can be made more mainstream, and I have a greater set and all that other kind of stuff. But, you know, it's a good show, really good content. You have a great radio show. Ernest, you have a great show. We have a lot of shows, the TJRS Radio Network. We have a lot of programs that are quality programming, that can have quality content. They are considered quality programming, but they are not on a national scale. They're not syndicated. And without the financing, of course, it seems, or without a vehicle to get it onto national programming, it's not done currently. So what is one of the ways that we could look at, maybe if it's not banding together or however, what are some of the ways that we can look to bring more diversity to the news?
We can't. I mean, just it is Gil Scott-Heron, right? It will not be televised. You can't ask the oppressor to free you at all, like zero. And so until at some point we decide, like we've all decided to do broadcast, just like you decided to do this show, we have to continue to push ourselves to do those things so that we do have different things out in the universe, opposed to the garbage that we're going to be, that's going to be forced on us, right? And so that's a part of our freedoms, that we have to explore that, and we have to do it in a way that people can hear you, right? And so once you start making a point that you're not screaming at someone or cursing at them, that they can actually hear you, then you can make some kind of change. But everything else becomes rhetoric if you start yelling and calling names, because people can't hear when you start calling out names. So mainstream only picks it up when your ratings get high, right? It's like a sitcom. They only pick you up if you get high ratings, and then they'll dump you the first time they can if you play in too much politics.
I see. Okay.
I think you just have to keep steadfast in the truth. And I agree with you that there shouldn't be yelling, because, you know, that just turns into a cat fight or whatever, and you can see that on Bravo. I don't need to turn to Blog Talk Radio to catch that. I think you need to stay steadfast in your truth. It's funny you mentioned Gil Scott-Heron, because one of the slogans that I use for my network is "The revolution is being broadcast," because I have taken a more pointed stand, and I'm certainly not comparing myself with that man and his message, because he was fantastic, but I purposely made a point this year, when my politics started to change greatly from what I believed the year prior and before that, that I, no matter who came against me and called me a wackadoodle or whatever, that I was going to stick to what I believed to be the truth. I was going to put it across in the best way I could. I cut out cursing from my show. I tried to make my show richer in content. And eventually, over time, people started to come around and they started to notice. And I started to network with great people. And I've had great people like Jay Ryle or Kathleen on my show. And I'm glad to be part of their shows, because you put yourself in the right circle and the right group of people, the right people will gravitate toward you naturally. It's the whole birds of a feather thing, I think.
Yeah.
Indeed.
It sounds simplistic, but there's really no other way to approach it unless you're going to sell out and be a moron on radio, you know?
You're absolutely right. Well, we're down to our last couple of seconds, so definitely, you know, your final thoughts and well wishes for the Davis family, certainly. Ernest, you want to go first?
I have a feeling I'm not going to sleep well tonight, because this really has struck a nerve with me for some reason. And I don't know why, but it has, and I'm going to be covering it on my show tomorrow night. We do a 90-minute show on Thursday, and I hope that I can pull the cover back from a few more people's eyes and show folks just how wrong this whole incident was. And I'm kind of anti-capital punishment, so we're going to talk about that a little bit too. But I hope somewhere along the way Troy's family can find some peace and rest in their souls. I don't know how they're going to do it. It's unimaginable to me. But I hope that they find it somewhere along the way.
What time is your show, Ernest? 10,
my
right?
show is 9 o'clock tomorrow night on ErnestRadioNetwork.com, or just search Ernest Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be there for 90 minutes, 9 o'clock Eastern.
Okay, great. And Jerome, your final thoughts, my friend?
Well, I'm at a loss of words, so... I don't know if I have any final thoughts, but I do want to thank you for having the show tonight and being able to broadcast this. I think it's important that when there are things going on in the world, that we probably need to go on record and say what needs to be said, opposed to being politically correct on what we think people want to hear. So I want to thank you for inviting me on and having your show. Thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. And I want to thank Sean, my son Sean, because when I came in tonight and he just walked to the door to let me in, and he said, "He's dead," you know, and his spirit was just sinking, and, you know, his eyes, his face, I just knew how upset he was. And we sat and we talked for a little bit, and he was really upset, you know, and just really confused about how the country could allow this to happen, and you know, thanking God that it wasn't him and so forth. So I said, you know what, let's go on air. Let's talk to some other people and see if we can't air this out a little bit. So he actually does feel better. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I did it. And I was at a loss for words, not really having any, you know, real agenda. just wanting to be here and talk to a few people, knowing that there were other people out there that felt this way. And we had quite a few people in the chat room. So I just want to thank everybody. Thank you, Jerome. Thank you so much, Ernest. Thank you both for coming here. Jerome, you know, God bless you, because you were like, sure. You know, I call you at the last minute, let's do a show. You're like, sure. So I truly, truly appreciate that. And, you know, for everybody who listened, I appreciate you for joining in. Hug your kids, talk to your kids and your family members, because, you know, this is something that's troubling a lot of people around the world. So, you know, better talk about it than just carry it with you. You know, release it, let it go, say a prayer for the family, and definitely our condolences, prayers, and well wishes to the Davis family tonight. So, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Ask Kathleen with my distinguished guest, Jerome Esprit of Esprit Radio. Jerome, your show tomorrow.
We're on tomorrow at 11 Eastern. You can go to espritradio.solasyracuse.com.
Okay, great. So, you know, Ernest Radio Network tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, and you can search him at Ernest Radio Network. And the Esprit Radio Show, say the website again, the link again, Esprit Radio Network.
Oh, EspritRadio.SoldaSyracuse.com or EspritMedia.com. You can hit either one.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you'll find us here every Sunday night at Ask Kathleen at 6:30 p.m., the pre-show to the show, which is Adam, Where Art Thou, at 7 p.m. It's broadcast here live and also on the TJRS Radio Network. So God bless you, everybody. Have a fabulous evening and a wonderful tomorrow. Be blessed, and we'll see you soon.